This continual fog we've been living in feels like what I imagine prison was like for John the Baptist. It is cold there in his stone cell. Daylight never reaches him. It's impossible to ever fully shake the chill. There are only scraps of food for him to eat unless people from the outside visit him. There is no comfort. There are no blankets or anything warm unless they bring those for him too. How long has he been there like this? Months? Perhaps even more than a year now? How long have we been sucked in, only catching a glimpse of the sun every once in a while? I am beginning to lose track. From within that lonely place of violence and torture, and let us be clear, the prison was a tool the empire used to terrorize dissidents. From within that painful place, it becomes difficult for John to hold on to what he has always trusted to be true. John, who recognized the Christ while they were both still in the womb, their mothers meeting to wonder about all that was to come. John, the forerunner, that outspoken prophet in the wilderness, preparing the way for people to draw near to this new kind of teacher. John has known this way in his bones. He's lived it his whole life. And now, cut off from Jesus and from their community, things shift. The visibility on this way he has so doggedly prepared has been dramatically cut back. He can't see the horizon from his cell. He can't see tomorrow from his cell. Maybe it's been coming slowly, creeping a little bit more each day, but when we meet him in this morning's gospel, John is not sure of anything. He's shrouded in this chilling fog. From this place of uncertainty and fear comes forth his doubt, his deeply searching question. Without shame, he sends it with his friends to Jesus. Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? There is so much more that John expected from the Messiah. He hoped for a Messiah who would upend the whole social order. He thought he was following a Messiah who would topple the empire and all its unjust leaders. Leaders like the one who has now imprisoned John for speaking truth to power. Together with so many other followers, together with many of us, I think, John hopes for a God who will make everything right in one fell swoop. War, poverty, injustice, suffering, can't God wave a mighty arm and fix all that? I think this is what John longs for, and it has not happened. So, did he have it all wrong? Was Jesus then not the one? John must be desperate to send such an edgy question, and so publicly. But he also has no choice. If he's going to get anything back from Jesus, sending his question on the lips of his friends is his only option. I wonder if he frets as he waits to hear back. I wonder if it feels like he has nothing left to lose. Even after all the times I have heard this story, I find myself cowering here, bracing. I half expect Jesus to lob a searing rebuke back to John, adding insult to injury. I imagine Jesus chastising him, "Oh, ye of little faith," something like that. But he doesn't. The harsh words don't come. He only sends back tenderness. Jesus doesn't pretend that the state of the world is better than it is. He doesn't act as though he's fixed it all. And he does not belittle John's doubt. And he also doesn't downplay the real good that has already happened. People have been healed one at a time. He did not come into a village and wave a wand, transforming the whole of it in one go, but person by person, healing has come. I want to add a bit of context to the healing that Jesus describes here, which sounds awfully ableist today. There are many, many ways that bodies arrive and move in the world, and they are good. Disability advocates have helped us to understand that disabilities are not problems to fix, encouraging us instead to turn our attention to a world with limited access in so many ways and places, and understand that that is what needs fixing. But in Jesus's time, being deaf or blind or with limited mobility meant that you were cast out to the margins of society, stripped of your dignity and forced to beg in order to survive. When Jesus heals people, then, he is restoring them to their communities and to the possibility of a thriving, independent life. Village by village, he is also challenging what others once believed to be true about these same people. Tell John about the healing that is happening. Tell him what you see and hear, Jesus urges the disciples. Tell him how people have been set free, how they have been reconciled, how they are caring deeply for one another. It is not whole-scale change, but for each of these people, it is tremendous. And then Jesus turns to the gathered crowds and speaks to them about John. John, who is stuck in a prison cell and who seems to have lost his faith. John, Jesus says, who is a prophet and so much more than a prophet. John, Jesus says, who is truly great, as amazing as they come. John brings his seeking, his doubting, his painful question to Jesus. And in response, Jesus lifts John up as the model of faith, as the example to which all these crowds can aspire. It is astonishing. It is a liberating kind of hope that Jesus offers here. And it is something I sometimes struggle to believe. It can be hard to see or trust any of this when we're deep in the fog. But here's what I saw and heard as I hiked up Mount Wanda this week, buried in fog for the umpteenth time. I noticed that while I couldn't see much in any direction, the ground beneath my feet was awfully soft. It wasn't muddy, but the trail had some give to it. My footfalls were far softer than those in the long, dry months of summer. The way forward was opaque, but each step seemed to be softly cradled. I saw, even if only right around me, how green it has become. The grass is getting taller now, and it's covered in dewdrops, which my dog loves to lap up as we walk by. Fields of young miner's lettuce have erupted on either side of the trail, almost ready to nourish plenty of critters and probably some delighted humans, too. Up on the ridge, I saw milkweed plants with their pods burst open. Many of the seeds were already gone, but some were still clinging in that white fluff. I imagined where in this fog they might land, slowly getting ready for the monarchs that will rely on them next year. From there, on top of Mount Wanda, I could not see Mount Diablo. I could not see the delta or the wind turbines that are visible on a clear day. I could not even see the next set of hills. Everything disappeared into the fog, even the towering live oaks just in front of me. But as I came down the trail, turning the bend to make the final meandering descent back to the trailhead, the air was suddenly filled with sound. A moment earlier, all I could hear was water dripping from the trees above. But now, I heard children. I could not see them. All I could see was this thick, gray fog. But down below, it was time for recess at John Sweat Elementary School. And many, many children were overjoyed to be outside in that same fog. I wondered what searching questions these kids had already asked that day, without hesitation or apology. I hoped there had been many, and I hoped they had been well received. And I hope that however long we stay in this fog, whether it's the fog that enshrouds our hills or the equally real fog of doubt and worry, despair even, that pervades so much of our world these days. I hope that for as long as we are here, we can cling to John's example and to Jesus's loving response. I hope that we can reach together for stories of healing and liberation, stories of the ways that abundant life has been made possible for those who had been kept out, stories of communities that have been healed in large and small ways. I hope we can help each other recognize this goodness and trade these glimpses as seeds of hope. And even before we get there, I hope we can trust the tenderness with which God welcomes our biggest questions and our most searching doubts. This, Jesus tells us, this is how we prepare the way of the Lord. Even when we are deep in the fog, this love is ready to hold us and hold all we can bring.